Hey Ed, this is Attorney Greg Dell. How are you?
Oh, you know what, Greg? I wasn't even watching the clock. We were having so much fun with the Octomom. Thanks so much for coming on the show. You know, it's a real pleasure. Your subject today is really going to put us in a much better mood than the Octomom. Thank you for changing the subject for us. I don't know. When I was a kid, there was a thing called disability, and it went to like one guy in your neighborhood. He had one leg shorter than the other. He had the block under his shoe. He had been through massive therapy. It was the 1960s to 1970s when therapy was really therapy, not just a way for the hospitals to make money and do nothing for you with music on in the room. Real hard work, real laborious, real tough life. It was not an easy life. Today, half the people down at the marina who are out fishing in their expensive boats are collecting disability money. Every week on some show, whether it's CNBC or it's 60 Minutes, this is a gentleman who was completely disabled. And there he is playing basketball, lifting boxes. So could you help put in perspective what is real disability and what are the abuses that people are still getting away with?
All right. Well, let me make sure you understand. This is disability insurance, which is a contract that you either buy from an insurance agent or it's a benefit that you get from your employer. And in order to be disabled, the policy states you're unable to perform the duties of your occupation, or it could say you're unable to perform any gainful occupation.
Now, let's go with the first one first. You're on a job, and you've lost your ability to do that particular job. Your insurance will pay you a certain amount of money. If it's been paid up by your boss, you will get a certain benefit?
For example, a doctor, a surgeon, a heart surgeon, because that's an easy one for everyone to relate to. And, you know, he needs his hands, obviously, to do surgery, and here he has a severe case of carpal tunnel syndrome.
Right.
Or he has arthritis in his hands, and he doesn't feel comfortable performing surgery anymore, and that was the substantial material duties of his occupation. And that's what he bought the policy to protect. So that heart surgeon, if he can't do surgery, but then he can just do an office practice, then he could be totally disabled and collect disability benefits for whatever amount he bought. Now, he could have only bought a policy up to whatever he could have qualified for, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 a month, depending upon what the limits were at the time that he bought based upon his income.
Got it. Now, if you could explain this term, because this is going to be a mouthful for a lot of people listening to the show. Wrongful disability insurance terminations. They're on the rise because corporations are trying to cut costs. Put that into layman's terms. What are the companies doing, and how is it affecting the people who work for them?
Okay, well, the companies that are really cutting it is the insurance companies, because what you got to understand is that most of the people who have these policies are getting it as an employee benefit from their employer. So the funds to pay when a person actually goes on disability, it's not coming from their employer, it's coming from the insurance company. But what's happening is that the insurance companies aren't collecting as many premiums as they used to. More people, for whatever it is, are becoming more disabled. They're having more claims, they're selling less policies, and they're putting higher scrutiny on these claims when people go to file a claim. But it goes a step beyond that, because what's really making it difficult is that these people that are getting these policies from their employers are governed by ERISA. And ERISA is this federal law that goes back to 1979, which is the same law that governs our health insurance claims. Now, a lot of people know when they have a health insurance claim, and a lot of times they'll get a denial saying, we're not covering that bill when you went to the doctor. But you can go through this administrative procedure, and you can appeal to us. And if you don't like that, you can appeal again. And then if you don't like that, you can sue us. And that's the same thing that happens with these disability insurance claims if your claim is provided to you by your employer and it's governed by ERISA. You have to appeal to the same company that denied you. If you get denied, then you get to go to court. And then what gets even more screwed up is that the laws are pro-insurance company, where the judges have to defer to the insurance company's decision. So it's an old law that hasn't been tweaked that's really making it hard for disability claimants, and the insurance companies know that there's not much that a claimant can do once the case gets to court, meaning they're going to have their back against the wall. Certainly they can win their case, and we win them all the time for our clients, but the insurance companies take advantage because there's no penalties to the insurance company if they're wrong. If they're wrong, they pay.
Now, here's a staggering figure, if you even have a current one, but I'm sure you can give me a good estimate. How much money is tied up in the abuse of this system.
Well, tell me what you mean by abuse. Abuse from the claimant side or abuse from the insurance side?
Well, I guess what I'm interested in is a system that doesn't work like this one. Both sides can play the game. You even said the law is structured. So when it's structured so that the insurance company has the final say. So what I'm concerned about is the total loss of resources and revenue from a legitimate system on both sides, which would appropriately administer the money, versus people getting away with and manipulating the system to abuse it. If people were not taking advantage of it, how much richer would the system be for appropriate claims?
Well, let me tell you that I don't agree that there's certainly people out there who commit fraud. I mean, there's insurance fraud in every aspect.
But you don't think it's worth that much cash? You don't think the fraud is nearly as alarming as all the news since I was born, CBS, NBC, all my life. Insurance ripoffs, it's huge. So maybe the real story here is not nearly as huge in the ripoff department?
No, the story here is more on the insurance company side in terms of them getting away of denying these claims and strong-arming these people to return to work in a disabled capacity when they can't, because it takes 180 days to appeal a denial. Then they got to wait another 90 days. Now they got no money coming in for 9 months.
Well, there you go. So there's a lump of cash you can tell me about. How much abuse in that area? Right there. What kind of money are we talking about?
From the insurance companies, this is a $15 billion industry.
I knew it.
$15 billion.
And the abuse is, and let me see. Yeah. And let me see if I can cut through this in layman's terms, because I know it is tough for us. I mean, I'll be honest with you. You say the word disability insurance to people, you know, unless they've been in it, they don't even know where to begin. So let's try and simplify it. The idea is insurance is there to protect for legitimate claims. Companies purchase insurance, but companies, I guess, don't want the insurance company to pay out because then their rates go up. Is it similar to that?
I don't know. Certainly their rates can go up. I don't know it hits them as much as they want it's all about return to work. That's the code word on the inside for denying a claim.
Okay.
How quickly can we get the employee to return to work? Because remember, the employers, they want that employee back at work. There's a huge cost to training a new employee to come in and take over the job. So
wait a second. Hold on. You got to go easy with me. You're trying to tell me a company gives a crap if somebody lives or dies? Honest to God, they got a guy on disability and some geek in some corporation says, you know, Al Johnson, I really hope he pulls through and is able to come back to work, instead of saying, Jesus, I'm so glad Al Johnson's gone now. Get me some idiot, 19 years old with a lower pay rate, give him less insurance and make this company more efficient. You think that companies really care about their employees?
I think that you might be assuming that a lot of people disabled are in their late 50s and 60s, and you'd be surprised how many people are disabled in their mid-40s.
And even earlier, 20s and 30s even, right?
And they're key. These are key employees. I mean, there's a huge – just look in my business, in my law practice.
Right.
You know, having a lawyer who knows what he's doing in this area of the law, if that lawyer leaves, huge training curve. I mean, take – these huge companies that have policies like Boeing, an engineer leaves who was working on, you know, the single component of the engine that was for this airplane. There's not a lot of people out there who can do that, who can just jump in and take that job. So it's the employers, they want these people back.
Okay. All right. That is news to me. I'll take you at your word there. Talk to me a little bit about, because again, this is tough stuff for the public, but trying to put it into layman's terms. You are a member of a group of eight. You represent claimants through all the different stages that you go through with disability insurance, appeals, denials, litigation, lump sum buyouts. Can you simplify for the public what is the process today? How is it supposed to work? And how do you guys help claimants?
All right, we get involved at all stages. The simplest stage is you're thinking about filing. You see, the misconception is somebody thinks, look, I paid my premiums or my employer paid $50, $100, $200 a month, and now I'm filing this paperwork,
right?
An application, a letter from a doctor. I should get paid. I don't understand. I paid my premiums. Why aren't you paying me?
Absolutely.
But it doesn't work like that.
Why?
Because the insurance company is looking for any excuse possible to not pay the claim.
I knew that they were the bad guys. I'm just not sure that the other companies are the good guys. But yeah, so what's the game for the insurance company? Insurance company does well if what happens?
If there's less claims, they're going to do well. This is all risk. It's like every other
insurance.
Deny. Hoping that their premiums are going to exceed what there comes in claims.
Sure, and they're going to try to deny every possible claim so they get to keep all the money. What capitalist wouldn't?
If they can.
Yeah.
Now, listen, I'm not going to go and tell you that they deny every claim because they don't. And believe it or not, the statistics are as high as over 65% of initial claims are approved.
Ooh, one-third unapproved. One-third denied. One out of three people online in pain because of their stinking rotten job, what they made them do, one-third are going to get squat if the company had anything to say about it. So how do you guys help a claimant?
So what we do is we get in, whether it's – if they've been denied, we'll help them with the appeal process. If they're considering filing and they have the opportunity to call us beforehand, we'll walk them through the entire application process because – unlike Social Security disability, which you've heard about, obviously, when you get approved for private disability insurance, like we've been talking about, it's a month-to-month evaluation. They continue to evaluate you every month for the rest of your life, basically, until age 65.
Wow.
And they'll do it in so many different ways. They'll send someone to talk to you. They'll send video surveillance out to watch you. They'll make you send in a claimant form every month. They'll make you go to your doctor every 2 months and have the doctor fill out a form with a bunch of questions. How much can you lift? How long can you sit? How long can you stand? So it's nonstop, constant, what I call harassment.
Was my question. Isn't that does not constitute harassment at some point?
Well,
to every 30 days knock on the door? Is your arm still broken? Can your leg still not work? About that?
You know what? You're in private enterprise. I have someone who works at AT&T, and she has a degenerative disc disease in her neck with spinal cord impingement. It's not going away. You know, we do an appeal for this person. She wins her appeal. 2 months later, they cut her off. It's a chronic condition. It gets worse over time. It doesn't get better. One doctor said she couldn't do it. 2 months later, they find another doctor who says, yeah, she can return to work.
Wow.
So it's, so they can find what they want to find. It's called hired gun physicians.
That's horrible, isn't it? I mean, your stomach has got to sink a little bit, Gregory. You went to law school. You're in the greatest country of the world, and you're in a den of thieves where everybody's taking advantage of sick, injured people. Horrible. Do you mind, not to interrupt, but I just want to keep it moving for the audience. Do you mind going into a little bit of a case involving an emergency room physician? I'm reading, this is on the website of Dell and Schaefer. At the age of 27, Mr. Dell represented an emergency room physician and obtained a $2.96 million jury verdict against the people who are always on my side. Nationwide is on your side. But yet you had to go fight like the Dickens. Talk about that a little bit as an example of what you do.
Sure. That was a surgeon who was involved in a severe automobile accident. Was able to return to work in a limited capacity. He had what was called an uninsured motorist automobile coverage policy. The disability carrier said, no, look, you've returned to work. The auto insurance carrier in that case said, you've returned to work. We don't think you're going to have any problems. And our position was, look, he might be at work, but you've cut off his work life expectancy by at least 10 years. And this was somebody who was making $300,000-$400,000 a year. So they said, we're going to offer you X amount of dollars, which was nowhere near that amount of the jury verdict. The case went to trial. It was 6 years after his automobile accident. He was still working. And when we got to trial, we explained to them that he was 50 years old, and the average emergency room physician is going to work to age 65, and his life work expectancy is going to be cut down by at least 7 years. He had two surgeries to fix his neck. And this company should be responsible for his future lost wages that are going to come about, as well as his past lost wages and his pain and suffering and loss of enjoyment of life.
Wow.
And the jury agreed, and they gave him, over $2 million in future lost wages due to his injury.
You represent at all the different stages of the claim, correct? You got the initial claim, you got the appeal, you got the ERISA that you mentioned to us before. Do you operate on a team when you take on a case, or is it you have this guy's case and the lawyer next to you has his? I mean, is it doable for one lawyer to do all the things that are necessary to follow through a single case, or does it have to be a team?
I mean, sure, one lawyer could do it if he had nothing else to do, but we put two lawyers on every single case and then a team of paralegals plus our own medical experts.
Wow.
And, you know, we work on these cases all over the country. Most of them are in federal court, which is nice because it doesn't require you to go to court a lot. They've really become much more digital, allowing you to attend by phone and do all things by email and things like that. But you absolutely need a team because, you know, you're fighting against – these are giant insurance companies, and that's the part of the job that I love. You said earlier my stomach was turning. I love helping these people. I mean, I love helping these people. I love being – you know, this is the little guy up against the giant, and I personally, in my firm, I don't care how big they are, we're going to tear them up. And we've been able to do that all over the country.
Now, that's the part I was thinking about. Right, maybe I phrased it wrong, but right. It is a little stomach-turning that these amazingly powerful corporations will lay waste to individuals' lives, but for the representation of legal teams like yours.
It's the people's police. I mean, that's the way it's always been. That's the way it's going to be. And
now,
a lot of people go away. They just go away, which is sad.
Yeah, they get beaten down by it, right? They can't. They got the pain itself. They got the disability themselves. They got the stress. They got the pressure. And then the system could be too much for them altogether.
I mean, at a whole other extreme, I've had clients that have literally taken their lives. They just couldn't take
it.
I mean, that's the ultimate extreme.
By the way, can their family go after the SOBs that drove their family member to take their own life and at least...
You know, if you can prove that it's called intentional infliction of emotional distress, and this is something that just happened recently and something we're working on right now, if you can prove that something was done intentionally, there may be a right to bring a tort claim outside of the contract. Because remember, these are contracts that these people have, so you only have the rights to benefits that are given in the contract, which would be disability benefits. And if you die under these policies, they only pay you like another 2 months of benefits. They're not like life insurance where you get the full policy, or if your spouse dies and he was supposed to collect for another 10 years, the wife can collect. It doesn't work like that. Once the person getting the benefits died, the policy's over. But, I mean, there's not a lot of cases out there where somebody has taken their own life as a result of the conduct of the insurance company, but there definitely are extra contractual claims where these companies where these companies have been hit for big bad faith and punitive damages.
Gotcha. You're listening to The Antil Show on TalkRadioX.com. Our guest is Gregory Michael Dell. I think we might have a call on the line right now. I heard somebody say hello. Sure, go ahead, caller. Gregory Dell is listening. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, hello. I'm talking to you. Hello? Hello, do you hear me?
Oh.
Do you hear me talk? Hello, I am talking to you. Go right ahead and ask your question. You're on the show. Go ahead. Hello?
Oh, I was calling.
Yeah, I had a feeling. That's it. Okay. All right, listen, it happens. Sometimes people dial the wrong phone number there. Hello. We appreciate stopping by. Gregory, as we leave this segment and the issue continues and the people who are most affected by this, as you said, can be so burdened by it, what's the first thing they do? What's the first step they take where they don't compromise their situation and they can get the benefit of advice like yours? Before you do anything, what should you do first when you have a disabling injury?
Well, the first thing you do, obviously anyone who calls us, we always offer them a free consultation initially, so that's a no-brainer for them to call us and see, hey, what can be done?
Well, I do apologize to Gregory. I don't know what happened there on the phone line. I don't know who Mr. Hello was. So in the middle of it all, I want to thank Gregory Michael Dell for doing a great job with us today. You know, I'm sure we made a really, really big difference to people who are in the middle of this horrible, horrible experience. It's one thing to have a disability because of your job, your rotten, stinking, you know, good-for-nothing company that you work for that could care if you were alive or dead. Now, I don't expect Gregory, he can't agree with me on that. He's a lawyer who's helping people. I'm here to tell you the truth. Your boss could give a crap if you and your children are alive or dead. and I don't care how many Christmas parties you go to. I don't care how many people tell you the contrary. This is the way it is, or else you wouldn't have litigation and insurance at that level. All right, hey, I think we have Hello back. Is this Hello again? Hey, Hello, how you doing?
Hey, Ed, this is Greg Dell.
Ah, good. I thought Hello snuck his way back in. So this is what I was doing, Greg. I was trying to explain to people, this is a world where it's everything's adversary. You guys, I'm sure, are never, ever idle at your office. Does politics enter at all? Could some good politician in Washington, some, you know, well-meaning politician, improve this system? Or is it going to stay pretty much as you've described it, which is, you know, not so attractive and also capable of just driving people away who have rightful claims? Is there reform coming in any direction?
Yes, you asked. That's a phenomenal question. And this is a little technical, but I can tell you that last year there was a federal Senate Finance Committee hearing with Senator Max Baucus. And a couple other representatives from the plaintiff side and from the insurance side came. And what's really driving this is there's one clause in these disability policies called a discretionary clause. And that clause says that the insurance company has the right to interpret the terms of the disability plan and make whatever decisions they want. And if the policy has that language and a person then goes and sues the company, the courts have to defer to the insurance company. So what more than 20 states have done at the state level through their Department of Insurance and then passing a law at the state legislator level is they've said, look, if you try to issue these disability policies in our state and you have that discretionary clause in the policy, we're not going to allow you to sell that coverage in our state. And there's actually been 20 states that have passed that law. Now, that law doesn't become effective, only applies to the new policies that are sold after the effective date of the law. So, for example, if that law just went into effect, for example, in Texas as of January 1st, 2012, any new policy that's now sold in Texas that will not have a discretionary clause, which means that people, if they get denied, they still have to appeal to the insurance company, but they're going to get their fair day in court because the judge is going to be able to look at the case fresh, and he's not going to have to defer to the insurance company. And that is a huge positive for disability insurance claimants. And as these policies get older and older, we're going to flush out all these old crappy policies with discretionary clauses, and we're going to get fair reviews in the court. So 20 states have done that, and some states have been on board with it and some states haven't. And I've been lobbying tremendously in, you know, numerous states to try to get this law passed in all these states so we can get rid of these discretionary clauses. And it would be great if at the federal level and the Department of Labor who makes the ERISA regulations just said disability policies can't have discretionary clauses.
Wow. Well, you know what? So, then maybe there is help on the way. As I leave you, I can't leave without asking this question. The true, genuine legal use of disability insurance should stay intact. In other words, if people were following traditional disability insurance and not finding ways around it, it would work fine. But we're in a distended, a kind of exploited system now, and you're in there battling. Is that right?
Yeah, let me tell you, just to be clear, because I always find that the media perception is there's these people out there who are taking advantage of it, of the disability, and shifting all the attention away from the insurance companies. The reason is the media likes the story of the cheerleader who said she was disabled and she's out running around and doing stuff. But you know what the majority of the story is the guy who says he can't work and he gets caught on video surveillance eating some chips or walking his dog or going to the grocery store for 15 minutes. And the disability company says, well, if you can go to the grocery store for 15 minutes or you can go to a restaurant, then you can sit at your desk for 40 hours a week.
Right. That's what we see.
That's not the way, you know, that's not fair to the disability claimants. That going to a store for 15 minutes doesn't mean that you can be a reliable employee and show up every single day, 8 hours a day, 40 hours a week.
Right.
So
the media misses the story. What? The media loves a story about the guy who's ripping off the disability, faking it. But what story is the media missing?
Well, the media did hit a story a few years ago, I think through Good Morning America, where they they went after the insurance companies and showed that other side of the view, you know, of the claimants who are being wrongfully denied and the disability insurance companies who are hiring the doctors who are in their pockets, who they pay $600,000-$800,000 to, who the doctor will see 400 people in a year and only five of them are not disabled. You know, five of them are disabled, the rest are not disabled. You know, how does that happen?
Right.
So
now, you think there is pressure from insurance companies on the media? Yeah, go ahead and report that story. Go ahead and lambaste Nationwide, Allstate. Go ahead. See what happens to your advertising budget. See what happens to when your company tries to buy insurance from us. Go ahead. Run your little story. Get Mike Wallace out there. Start crying with everybody on TV. Go ahead. Get some old woman and make it seem like we completely laid waste to her life. And then see what the repercussions are in capitalism. I mean, insurance companies to me have always been one of the greatest evils because nobody knows what they do and they have way too much money and influence. But what would happen to CBS, NBC? They start blowing the lid off of big insurance company scandals. What do you think?
Well, look, some of them have done in the past, but I know for myself, I've been told by many medical journals and local dental associations and other medical associations that I can't advertise in their journals because one of their big backers is the fact that they're selling these medical benefits to their members.
Absolutely. Okay, I think we, first of all, Gregory, what a great job. I hope you will come back on the show often. You know what you got me thinking about right now is that movie The Insider with Russell Crowe and CBS and Al Pacino and how everybody knew about tobacco, but if anybody said a word about tobacco, the big evil economic dinosaurs were going to come in and eat everybody alive. So it's a really important issue, and the other thing is I really thank you for helping us understand it in layman's terms. That's always the hardest thing to do with a subject like this.
Thank you so much for having me. A great resource, too, for your listeners is on my website at diattorney.com. I blog about cases that go on all over the country every day. So I'm out there, the little guy, trying to expose it, working with people like you to try to get the message out there, and I really appreciate it.
Well, you're the man. Let me give that website slowly, and man, do you need to bookmark this website, because if today this is all academic to you, that's one thing. When it's all real and going on in the living room, at the kitchen table, you're going to be glad you could reach Gregory Michael Dell, diattorney.com. That's diattorney.com. Gregory Michael Dell. What a pleasure, man. Thank you so much for making time for us today. It's the Ed Till Show right here on Talk Radio X.